WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. September 11th and the war against terrorism has increased the urgency of restarting the peace process in the Middle East. Osama bin Laden has adopted the Palestinian cause as part of his agenda, although many Palestinians, including Hanan Ashrawi, have objected to that association. Both Palestinians and Israelis have been suffering during this second intifada. Israelis feel constantly unsafe because of a wave of suicide bombings. By September 10th, there had already been 30 of them this year. Palestinians are living under military occupation, and hundreds of Palestinians have been killed. A little later, we'll hear from Palestinian journalist Ghassan Khatib. Our first guest is David Horovitz, editor of the Israeli news magazine The Jerusalem Report. He's also author of the book A Little Too Close to God. He's lived in Israel since emigrating from England in 1983. I asked him to describe the range of reaction in Israel after the attacks of September 11th.
The main reaction in Israel was utter horror and a kind of weird sense of identifying with the nature of the attack, at the same time as people realized that this was something beyond anything that they had encountered here. I think people were sort of, once the initial shock had passed, they were trying to sort of draw parallels and proportions and realizing really that the scale of those attacks was amounted almost to sort of the equivalent to all the Israeli losses in the year of conflict with the Palestinians. And it was so much worse because it was as though somebody had attacked the Israeli Parliament building or some other kind of symbol of the state here as well. So this sense of identification was diminished by the realization that we had encountered nothing like this here.
Has the American war against terrorism changed daily life in any way in Israel?
I'm not sure that it has, and I wonder actually if Israelis would say that they're unhappy that it hasn't, because I think that initially, at least, the sense in Israel was, wow, finally now the Americans in their terrible pain will understand what we've been talking about and going through. That the sort of the natural trust that you have when you go about your daily life, that the people you're encountering don't want to kill you. That trust has been shattered, as Israelis feel it has been shattered for them. And there was a sense, I think, that America and Israel would now be leading the charge against the people who don't cherish the right to life. And what I think Israelis worry about is that not only is there no such partnership, but there's a fear that the Americans are concentrating on a very limited objective and are, in fact, for now at least, whitewashing some of the other sources of terrorism, which Israelis would regard as regimes like Iran and Syria, and indeed Yasser Arafat's Palestinian Authority, which at the very least, I would say almost all Israelis believe, fosters terrorism if it doesn't actually participate in it.
Now, I want to get back to that in a couple of minutes. Do you think that terrorism has escalated at all since the 11th, or do you think that the escalation has just been since the new intifada that started over a year ago?
The attacks that Israel has been facing, I would say, have not escalated in a significant way, except psychologically. That's that after September 11th in October, Palestinian gunmen killed an Israeli minister, and that was unprecedented, that they assassinated the minister of tourism in a Jerusalem hotel. But in terms of the day-to-day conflict, that had been causing its relentless death toll for almost a year before September the 11th, and on it still goes.
What are some of the things that you feel you can't do now, or places that you feel it's unsafe to go now since the second intifada?
Well, I'll give you a very personal example. Shortly before this, what we'll call the new intifada, erupted a year ago, along with tens of thousands of other Israelis, I would take my family out into the West Bank sometimes. Just a few weekends before the intifada erupted, we went out to Bethlehem, which is all of 10 minutes from my house. And I've got three young kids, and I'm not a foolhardy father, I don't think. It was safe. We drove into Bethlehem. We had lunch in a restaurant. We toured the city. We went to some places we hadn't seen for years because the places had been in territory that was too dangerous for years. A Palestinian kid jumped into the car at one point to show us the way. We asked a couple of Palestinian policemen for directions at a certain point, and there was nothing bizarre about this at all. This was normal interaction. And at that time, of course, tens of thousands of Palestinians were coming into Israel every day to work. Well, now, if anyone is foolish enough to try and enter Bethlehem or any other Palestinian city in a car with yellow Israeli registration plates, it becomes remarkable if they emerge unscathed. A few weeks ago, there was an Israeli, I think he was a parachutist or a hang glider pilot, drifted into the center of Ramallah, and it was front page news in Israel that he wasn't killed. Because, of course, if there's an image that has probably scarred Israelis as much or more than others in this intifada, it's the image of the two Israeli reservists who strayed last year into Ramallah by mistake and were battered to death in a police station in the city. And people just don't, you can't go now. You can't, there is no interaction. The level of hostility is just too deep.
Americans are trying to adjust to the threat of terrorism. It's something that Israelis have lived with for a long time. Are there ways in which you feel you've adjusted and other ways in which you feel you have not?
Well, you never really adjust, but you tell yourself that you are, and you tell yourself that you're carrying on. And you do become a little desensitized because that's the only way to carry on. I'm not sure how much of the daily assault really reaches American ears because, you know, I'm sure most people will have been aware that there was a suicide bombing outside a nightclub in Tel Aviv in June and that there was a pizzeria blown up in central Jerusalem 2 months later. But really, every day there are attacks. There was a suicide bombing foiled this week in Jerusalem. The guy was intercepted in the car that was bringing him and his explosives into Jerusalem. A Palestinian gunman opened fire on a bus, a civilian bus in northern Jerusalem, also this week, killed two Israeli teenagers, almost killed the Arab bus driver, whose life was saved, actually, by a Jewish medic. But it goes on every day. And we have got to the stage in Israel where you cannot stay in your home and not go out and just panic because you'd never go out. The threat is there all the time. There are threats every day. There are attacks every day. And you cannot give in to them. You have to go about your business. I think very telling in terms of a sort of image for that is the fact that the pizzeria Sparo at the junction of King George and Jaffa Road in Jerusalem, which is probably the most popular crossroads in the country, the best-known junction in the country, that pizza restaurant reopened a month after it was blown up. 15 people were killed, and the owners said the way to beat terrorism is to simply carry on as usual. They rebuilt the restaurant. The Arabs and Jews who worked there before work there again now. Nobody quit. As far as I know, a few of the Israelis have been called into the army since the just happened to have been called up. They're of that age, in their late teens, but the same people work there, and the actual business has actually improved in the restaurant. More people go there because they want to show that they will not be deterred.
If you're just joining us, my guest is David Horovitz. He's the editor of the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report. He's lived in Israel since emigrating there from England in 1983. He's also the author of the book A Little Too Close to God. Now, Hezbollah and Hamas, the two major groups that have targeted Israel, were not included on the Bush administration's list of terrorist organizations that the coalition will fight. Although just a few days ago, the Bush administration authorized the U.S. Treasury Department to freeze the assets of Hezbollah and Hamas. What's the range of reaction to Israel to whether Hezbollah and Hamas should be included on the list of terrorist groups?
Israelis would definitely consider Hezbollah and Hamas to be dangerous terrorist organizations that are prepared to target civilians and that are openly, avowedly committed to the destruction of Israel and that need to be choked of resources, of ability to operate, support, and so on. Hezbollah fought Israel for years in the south of Lebanon when Israel occupied what was called the security zone in southern Lebanon. More than a year ago, Israel withdrew all its troops from Lebanon to the international border in partnership with the United Nations, and Hezbollah continues to target and attempt to target Israel across the border. It's not a case of seeking to liberate occupied territory. The same applies to Hamas. Hamas from Gaza and from the West Bank is consistently attempting to carry out attacks on Israeli, not just Israeli soldiers, not even on Israeli settlers who are living in territory that most of the international community would not consider to be Israeli Israeli territory, but to also target civilians inside sovereign Israel. Hamas is openly committed to the elimination of Israel, opposed Yasser Arafat and the Oslo process, because that provided for coexistence between Palestine and Israel. So Israel would want these groups to be prevented from operating.
Last month, the Israeli Prime Minister Sharon accused President Bush of basically selling out Israel in order to keep the coalition together. Is that a popular sentiment in Israel?
Sharon warned Bush and the rest of the supposedly enlightened international community not to sell out Israel, and feared that there was an effort that would be appeasing the Arab world at Israel's expense. I would say that many Israelis would have considered it somewhat unfortunate that Sharon went public with parts of that speech. However, I think a lot of Israelis would identify with the underlying plea and sense of frustration in those remarks, the sense that Israel is once again, as it was during the Gulf War, being asked unreasonably to constrain and restrain itself when its civilians are being attacked.
I don't know if you saw this, but New York Times columnist Tom Friedman wrote a piece a few weeks ago that basically said America has been such a supporter of Israel that now what the Israelis should do is just ask, what can we do to help? And leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that's fine. And I think if behind the scenes Israel was being assured that sooner rather than later, the American-led coalition will focus its attention on the groups in our neighborhood that are targeting our civilians, then I think Israel would probably be more prepared to do that. But there isn't a sense like that. There's a sense that America has engaged in an operation that is having, at the very best, mixed results in Afghanistan, that it has not demanded any reasonable price from the Arafat regime for it being left alone for the time being, and that it's unreasonable to ask Israel to sit on its hands while its civilians are being killed. I mean, people are being killed every day here. And it's all very well for Tom Friedman to sit wherever he sits and tell Israel that, as a friend of America, it needs to put up and shut up. I would not be prepared to do that, and I don't think he would be prepared to do that if he had to take his heart in his mouth every time his kid went off on a school trip, or every time he got into his own car, or every time he went to work or walked down the street. Just to make it personal, and everybody has these stories. There have been car bombs at the crossroads around the corner from my house. The French Hill attack is somewhere where right where I used to live. A restaurant was blown up in Jerusalem on a street that all of us have walked down. These are not some kind of vague, marginal threat. These are very real threats. We start the day here in Israel absolutely uncertain whether we are going to end it.
Some Israelis have said they think that the United States has a double standard, that the United States is bombing Afghanistan to try to stop terrorism, but that the United States has criticized Israel for going into the West Bank or Gaza to get people they think are terrorists. Is that a generally held feeling in Israel?
Yes, it's a very widely held feeling in Israel. There's a sense in Israel that parallel that Sharon has tried to draw, really, between the Taliban and Yasser Arafat's Palestinian Authority is a valid parallel, that just like the Taliban, Arafat's regime is fostering terrorism, is refusing to arrest people who are right now planning attacks on Israeli civilians, and that Israel is doing exactly what America is doing. It's asked Arafat to arrest the bad guys, much as America asked the Taliban to hand over Osama bin Laden. It has been met with mockery and derision and non-cooperation. It has therefore sent crack troops and helicopters and so on to do the job itself, to prevent further attacks on its civilians with some success, and in return has been castigated by the American administration, told not to send its troops into Palestinian areas, as though the Arafat regime were as pure as the driven snow, when all it is doing is exactly what the Americans are doing in Afghanistan.
My guest is Israeli journalist David Horovitz, editor of the news weekly The Jerusalem Report. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Horovitz. He's the editor of the Israeli news magazine The Jerusalem Report. He's lived in Israel since emigrating from England in 1983. He's also the author of the book A Little Too Close to God. What would you say is the state of the peace movement now in Israel? Is there still an active peace movement?
There is, but it's been very marginalized, and you're speaking to somebody here who, for example, in the book I wrote last year, was very optimistic, and I remain a supporter of compromise. The problem that Israelis in the center and center left of the spectrum face is, if they're honest with themselves, they sense that Yasser Arafat really betrayed this process. And that takes us back, as every assessment of what has happened in Israel the last year must take us back, to Camp David. Because at the Camp David summit in the summer of the year 2000, as far as Israelis from the center left, quite a long way over to the left and all the way over to the right, their sense is that Arafat at Camp David proved that he didn't really want to make peace with Israel. Because as far as we understand what happened at Camp David and at the subsequent talks at Tabor and other locations, Israel offered to end the occupation, sought to end the occupation, to partner the Palestinians towards statehood on almost all of the territory that Yasser Arafat was seeking, all of the Gaza Strip, almost all of the West Bank, and a partnership in Jerusalem. And that wasn't enough. What we understand is that Arafat insisted, first of all, on attempting to sever Jews and Israel from any links to the Temple Mount, which is the holiest site in Jerusalem, as well as being the third holiest site in Islam, and also that Yasser Arafat, and this is really where people abroad, I often think, don't get this and don't understand this because it's so unbelievable. Yasser Arafat insisted on a right of return, as he calls it, for potentially 3.7 million Palestinians, refugees, not to come and live in the Palestinian state that he wanted to establish, but inside Israel. And that, of course, given that the population of Israel is 5 million Jews and 1 something million Arabs, would mean the end of Israel as a Jewish state. So as far as Israelis are concerned, at Camp David, Arafat really proved that when he purportedly accepted coexistence with Israel, he was cheating us. And he didn't want Israel and Palestine side by side, but in fact wanted a new Palestine and gradually to overrun Israel and turn it into a Palestine as well. And the vast majority of Israelis are utterly and possibly irrevocably disillusioned with Yasser Arafat. They feel he failed his people. They don't think he told his people that Israel wanted to partner the Palestinians towards statehood. And they think that he bears direct personal responsibility for the awful unfolding of day-to-day bloodshed and violence that we have suffered for more than a year now.
At the same time that there's a growing disillusionment in Israel about the peace process, I think there's a growing despair among Palestinians about the peace process. I think many, perhaps even most Palestinians, feel that their lives have just gotten worse in the past year, that they're living under occupation, they can't get out, they can't get to work, they have no basic freedoms anymore. And so Palestinians are, I think, I don't want to generalize too much, but I think many Palestinians find themselves just getting angrier at Israel.
Yes, and I don't, and I have a lot of sympathy for Palestinian anger, but they're directing it in the wrong place. They need to be directing it at the leader who, in my opinion, and I've had conversations on this radio station with Palestinian journalists in Gaza who have told me and listeners that I was lying, that Barak didn't offer to partner the Palestinians towards statehood and that Barak didn't offer to relinquish almost all the territory. Well, that's because their leadership never told them the truth. Because their leadership has incited against Israel, because their leadership has not dealt with them honestly, because their leadership missed the opportunity of a moderate Israeli prime minister ready for not only the best offer that Israel had ever made, the maximum offer that Israel can ever make without destroying itself, without committing suicide as a Jewish entity. Their leadership failed to end the occupation. And yes, of course their life is terrible now. And there have been 800 Palestinian casualties and 200 Israeli casualties. And the solution isn't, oh, there should have been more Israelis. The solution is nobody should have been dying here and nobody needed to have been dying here. And we all know where the middle ground solution runs. We know that basically, in the end, when there is common sense and readiness for compromise on the Palestinian side, as there was on the Israeli side, there will be territorial compromise. There will be no right of return, as the Palestinians call it, for refugees to the state of Israel, and there needs to be a partnership over Jerusalem. We can all draw the lines where the compromise has to run, and it is the tragedy of the Palestinian people, as much as maybe even more than the Israeli people this past 14, 15 months, that their leadership was too cowardly or too pig-headed or too, I don't know, thought that it could push the Israelis a little further. I would guess that cowardice figured fairly high and a desire not to go down in history as somebody who compromised on some of the Palestinian goals, and instead of which, I'm sorry to say, Arafat will go down in history as the man who failed his people and got a lot of people killed who didn't have to die.
Sari Nusseibeh, who's been a Palestinian negotiator and Palestinian spokesperson, has said that he thinks Palestinians have gotten too extreme And he said a few weeks ago, we're telling the Israelis, we want to kick you out. It's not that we want liberation, freedom, and independence in the West Bank and Gaza. We want to kick you out of your home. And in order to make sure that Israelis get the message, people go out to a disco or a restaurant and blow themselves up. The whole thing is just crazy, ugly, totally counterproductive. The secret is to get Israel's to side with you. We lost our allies. I believe you spoke with Sari Nusseibeh before coming to the studio for our interview today, yes?
Actually, I didn't because he rescheduled and I'm meeting with him tomorrow, but I did speak to him last week, actually.
And?
Well, Sari Nusseibeh is the kind of Palestinian leader with whom Israel could have made peace a year ago, and with whom Israel will presumably make peace, I hope, sooner rather than later, because Sari Nusseibeh also says that the Palestinians blew it at Camp David, that the Palestinians should not have been holding out for a right of return. He asks the question that all Israelis ask, what is a two-state solution if the Palestinians are demanding that millions of their people come to live in Israel? Now, I personally believe that Sari Nusseibeh is one of the few voices of moderation. I think the Palestinians, I hope, will get behind people like him. Rather than that, though, I fear that he is taking tremendous personal risks in setting out such moderate positions.
David Horovitz is the editor of the Jerusalem Report and author of the book A Little Too Close to God. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Israeli journalist David Horovitz, editor of the newsweekly The Jerusalem Report. He's also the author of the book A Little Too Close to God, which he describes as an account of the thrills and panic of a life in Israel. It seems that particularly since the Second Intifada started over a year ago, that just about the only interactions between Israelis and Palestinians has to do with the occupation. You know, that Israelis in the military see Palestinians when Israelis have guns or tanks trained on them, and Palestinians see Israelis when they have Israeli guns pointed at them. This is not a great way for people to learn to respect each other. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that, about how the predicament, the occupation, is kind of a recipe for escalating distrust and hatred.
Well, first of all, you're right. The situation is dire. This is not a little blip. This is a slipping back of a generation. It was a very prolonged process that took the sides to Camp David last year. But by Camp David last year, the vast majority of Israelis were ready for extraordinary compromises. And that summit failed. And in the wake of that summit, first of all, Israelis will be very hard-pressed now. It would take a lot of convincing them to be prepared to compromise. And the hostility that month after month of direct confrontation has wrought means that average Israelis and Palestinians deeply revile each other now. Israelis feel very much that the whole explanation for this is that the Palestinian leadership failed to take the chance to make peace. But of course, as every death occurs and every day goes by, that context becomes progressively less relevant, and you're left only with the endless violence and the endless hatreds. Now, there is a way out of this. The way out of this, really, is for the international community and primarily the United States to turn up the pressure. Now, obviously, I'm speaking from an Israeli perspective, but it seems to me fairly evident that the pressure first and foremost has to be directed at the Palestinian leadership. And let me just give you one little example of why this is not really a conflict where you've got to look at both sides and say they've both got to stop. The Palestinians have to stop. Then the Israelis will stop automatically. And here's the proof. You know, for months there were reports of daily clashes and shooting between Gilo and Bet Jala on the southern edge of Jerusalem. Gilo is a Jewish neighborhood built on land captured in 1967. Bet Jala is Palestinian territory just across the valley. And this was reported in most of the international media as though both sides kind of fired at each other now and again. But the fact is, on every occasion, the shooting started from Bet Jala, and Israeli tanks and soldiers protecting the Jewish neighborhood of Gilo fired back. And for months, Israel begged the Palestinian Authority to stop the gunmen from operating in Bet Jala. Nothing was done. Eventually, the Israeli army moved into Bet Jala. International protests, horrified appeals from the Palestinians. Behind the scenes, a deal was brokered where Arafat said, yes, I will put a stop to the shooting. The army pulled out, and hey presto, there was no more shooting. The same thing has occurred in Hebron. The same thing is starting to occur now in the individual cities that Israel is leaving after re-entering them after the assassination of the tourism minister. There needs to be pressure on Arafat to rein in the dangerous militant people, the people who are leading gangs of gunmen and who are sitting around in garages right now making bombs. If that pressure is placed on Arafat, if Israel feels it can be more secure without huge concentrations of troops in the West Bank, those troops will pull out.
Since the Second Intifada, many more Palestinians have died than Israelis, something like 800 to 200. I mean, it looks like the Palestinians have suffered a lot more than the Israelis, looking at those numbers.
Well, I just think that nobody should have been dying, and I don't think things would be better if four times as many Israelis, God forbid, had died. All the deaths were avoidable and have helped no one and changed nothing. Yes, the Israeli army is stronger than the Palestinian police force, but the solution is not for a greater balance of death. The solution is for an end to the violence and a return to an attempt at dialogue.
Now, although Israel is often the target of terrorist attacks, many Palestinians see Israelis as terrorists because of the occupation, because there are so often Israeli military men, Israeli soldiers who shoot Palestinians. I wonder if you feel any empathy for that.
I feel that every person who's died here over the last 14 months has been an absurd and unnecessary and futile and terrible and tragic death. But I would remind Palestinians who criticize the Israeli presence at roadblocks in the West Bank, around the West Bank cities, that the Israelis were not there a year and a bit ago. They had pulled out. As of the end of 1995, the major West Bank cities had been controlled by Yasser Arafat. The Israeli effort, the Israeli direction, has been to disengage from the Palestinians. On the first day at Camp David, the map, all sides agree, the map that Barak presented on the first day as the working map showed the entire Gaza Strip in Palestinian hands and 88% of the West Bank in Palestinian hands. That was the opening day map. Israel has been trying to end the occupation. It is the Palestinian leadership of Yasser Arafat that has prevented Israel from doing so. It sounds absurd, doesn't it? It sounds like double talk. I'm telling you, I'm speaking here as a moderate, as somebody who supported and supports the peace process, who voted for Yitzhak Rabin, who voted for Ehud Barak, and would be prepared for all the compromises that I was prepared for in the past. We have not been able to find a partner on the other side who wanted to end this conflict with us in a way that would enable us to continue to exist as a Jewish state. That's our only criteria. We want to be allowed to go on existing as we partner the Palestinians towards their statehood. There hasn't been a leadership here that wanted to do it with us.
You were drafted into the Israeli military in 1990. And one of the jobs, I believe, that you had in the military was as a guard in a Palestinian prison camp, yes?
A guard in an Israeli prison in Gaza where the inmates were Palestinians, yeah.
What impact did it have on you to guard an Israeli prison camp for Palestinians? And I guess what I'm trying to get at here is when people are mostly separated, mostly kept apart, and see each other only in circumstances like prisons or occupations, it's not a recipe for understanding and goodwill. Do you feel like you were changed by being put in that position of being a prison guard?
Oh, first of all, I loathed it, of course, and if I hadn't had to do it as part of my military service, I certainly would have done everything I could to avoid doing it. It was a dreadful place. What was starkly noticeable was the way it was a holding jail. In other words, it was kind of first port of call for any Palestinian arrested for anything. And remember, these were the years of the first Intifada, what we must now call the genuine Palestinian public protest against the Israeli presence inside the cities, which of course is not the situation today, which is why the current Intifada is so much less justifiable. But anyway, this was a first port of call, and you saw Palestinian kids of sort of 14, I would say, being brought in and being placed together with much more hardened and more dangerous people. And you saw the way these kids started to walk differently and talk differently because of the quote-unquote exalted company that they were keeping. And of course, the prison was an incubator for hatred. And on the Israeli side, it was demeaning and brutalizing and unpleasant for all of us who had to serve there. And it certainly didn't change my opinions, but it certainly underlined my sense that there is nothing to be gained by a continuing Israeli presence on Palestinian territory, and that we have to find a way to separate and allow the two nations to flourish independently of each other.
Wait, now let me stop you. What about that experience made you feel more strongly that there needed to be two states and that Israel needed to end the occupation?
Well, because for goodness sake, what was the Israeli army doing in Gaza anyway, where there are 1 million Palestinians and maybe 6,000 Jews? Common sense and pragmatism requires that you allocate and divide the territory in a way where most of the people of the Palestinian people live in the areas where mostly they live right now, and most of the Jews live in the areas where mostly they live right now. And that's the tragedy of everything we're going through now, because there is a solution. You have to find a territorial compromise and allow two states to flourish side by side.
David Horovitz, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
David Horovitz is the editor of the news weekly The Jerusalem Report and author of the book A Little Too Close to God. This is Fresh Air.